Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing!
Hi, I'm Louise.
And I'm Mary Kay.
And together we are Novel Gazing, the podcast that talks all about literary fiction. We are recording today's show on the 12th of May, which means that it is a day, it is a date, and I am approximate about that fact solely in the world because everything is still weird, but we hope you're surviving and working through it with us.
Yes, we do.
Very much so. It is a pleasure to have you on board. All right. On today's show, we are discussing current affairs and news from the literary fiction world, doorstoppers that we loved, and by this we mean the bookish kind of doorstoppers, and not the DIY sort, because that's a very limited discussion. And we will also be sharing our current reads.
Yes. And before all that, let's hear from one of our sponsors that make this possible.
Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing!
So, let's talk about what is going on in the literary world, because there's a ton going on, but nothing happening, if that makes sense.
Like, yeah, that's a really good way to sum it.
Time has paused, my life is buffering, etc.
It is the time of the think piece.
Yes, it totally is. So I have a think piece, sort of, and I'll link to it, of course, in the show notes. It is from the BBC, and it's about books that could be flourishing in this pandemic era, because if you're like us, we are flying through books. Like, I am reading more than I have since I was fun employed, which is what I call, like, when you don't have a job, but you have one lined up. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have to worry about it. You can have fun.
Nice.
Yeah. I like that. So a couple of things from this article that I thought was interesting. I know a few episodes ago we talked about people like to read nonfiction who aren't typically quote unquote readers, mm-hmm. because it's like learning or reading a newspaper kind of. And this is the first time in 2 years that fiction has outsold nonfiction.
That is a big shift, isn't it?
It's a big shift. And crime fiction is also on the up, which surprised me a little bit, because crime fiction to me is like, so not everyone, but like when my life is very calm, I want to read about something that is insane.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Like, I want to read about chaos. But one of the analysts in this article said that, and this is a quote, though it can be dark and gritty, and usually ends with justice done, the killer identified and punished, and peace restored. So I think like the endings might be what makes crime fiction cathartic.
Yeah.
At this time, which totally makes sense to me, because we don't know, like, there's so much uncertainty
mm-hmm.
in our world currently. And they also said historical fiction could continue to flourish through troubled times, because it can help to anchor anxious readers with its strong sense of place and traditional storytelling structure. So,
ooh, okay.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And they think that those three trends are somewhat short term, but that the long term, because that's what people turn to in crisis, right? Yeah. Sort somewhat escapist genre fiction. But long term, they're saying, and this is a quote as well, what will come out of this is interesting to think about. Maybe like in the 1930s, that there will be a big split. The Depression brought us both the golden era of pulp fiction and big, serious, realist novels. Ooh. So, yeah, so it could take a while for that to happen because you need some psychological buffer, like distance, to sort of process what happened in order to make art out of it. But yeah, I thought that was just interesting that they were looking at like past crises to see where the trend in or the trends in what people are reading are going or where they're going.
I think your point about like allowing the time to let it sink in before you start writing is an important one. Because I think there's going to be a lot of people putting out like the next coronavirus pandemic novel, and it's just too soon in a way.
Totally. Yeah. Also, they were saying, like, we don't want to read that right now. Like, that's already what's happening to us. So while certain titles about plagues are on the rise, it's a few titles and not, like, the whole sub-genre.
So it's not, like, a massive trend. It's, like, isolated.
Right. It's, like, people are going back to classics, and in those classics, like Albert Camus' The Plague is included.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, one of the things to consider. And the article ends, and I loved this, by saying, while predicting the long-term literary future is all well and good, the most pressing concern right now, of course, is to keep bookshops and the publishing industry afloat. So if you're thinking about reading a book and you just don't know when you're going to get around to it, go ahead on and buy it. If you know you're going to get someone a gift card to Amazon or Barnes & Noble in the future, just go ahead on and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the thing is, like, people are reading more, but they're not necessarily buying more books because they're not in the store. I mean, so much of choosing a book is serendipity. Like, what jumped out at you? And that we're not having that right now. It's all algorithm-based. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it comes from like a point of privilege to say what I'm about to say. But one of the things that's really helped us, and this is my household, is the scheduling in of treats, so to speak, as you go through this process. So, you know, for example, you have some cakes arriving from a local baker's or something. You have something to look forward to that is different from the news cycle, the stress of what we are all experiencing. And books form part of that process. They form a really valuable, lovely moment in your lives. Someone said to me on Twitter today that they'd made a rule that they could order one book a week. And I think that's brilliant. Like, the whole process of just going, I need this in my life. I'm going to make time for it. I'm going to treat myself to it now. So, yeah.
Definitely. I was wading through my TBR pile, and I was like, this is the lowest it maybe has ever been in my life.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what, I know I'm gonna read these books in the future at some point because I've been wanting to, so I just went head on and ordered all of them. And of course, like, the shipping is delayed because we're relying so much on the postal service, so by the time I finish a book, the next one usually has like just arrived, so it's still like brand new. You can get it out of the packaging if you want. Yeah, I think, and I also am grateful for the downtime that I have to read, even if it is harder to actually do it at this moment.
Yeah, you're right. Like when you said earlier about, oh, we're all reading so much more, it's like, we are. But equally, there's moments where you kind of look at a book, I know for me, for sure, looking at a book and thinking, I just don't want to read this. I don't want to read anything.
Yeah.
Just sort of oscillating between those. Ooh, oscillating. That's a good word.
Great word. I know. Love it.
Tick for myself. Yeah, oscillating between these two extremes. Like, you want to read everything and you are reading everything. And then just reading nothing and sort of staring into the void a little bit.
Yeah. I had to separate the space in my one-bedroom apartment so that, like, this is the section of the house where I work. And when I'm done working, I go over there and that's where I get to read or watch TV. And like, the bedroom is only for sleeping, like, because otherwise it, like, my whole cycle will get messed up. I have to be very like compartmentalized physically. But that's just, you know, me personally. And sometimes it's like, yeah, I just want to lose my whole sense of being in a book. And sometimes I can't let go enough to do that.
Well, you see, now this sort of ties in handily enough to the next article we want to talk about. And it's another think piece on the bookseller. And we will pop the link in the show notes as well. So don't worry about that. But it's about virtual literature. And I don't know about you, but virtual life, Zoom, web chats, video calls, conferencing. It's suddenly a new level of prominence in my life. Like, the amount of Zooms I've done over the past couple of weeks has been ridiculous. And yet I was thinking, a month ago, I didn't even know what this thing was.
Right. Like, their numbers for all virtual chatting are exponentially higher than they were 2 months ago.
Exactly. So that's why I'm virtual thinking is pretty much the zeitgeist at the moment in certain senses. And this piece kind of goes, okay, so what can the quote collaborations between writing and publishing and technology become in this space? Because we've all learned how important it is to stay in touch, how important it is to have that connection with people. And it's not rehashing the physical book versus ebook argument, because that is boring and dull and let's not go there. But rather it's saying, what can we make the next sort of version of the book to be, and what can we give it from technology to open up its possibilities?
Yeah, that's, I'll be honest, a lot of the terms in the opening of this article, I was like, I have no idea what that is, just because they were so nuanced and specific. I mean, it was delightful. Like, I can't wait to find out what that's going to look like. But I was thinking of some of the movies or different interactive sort of platforms that are somewhat literature. Like, remember Bandersnatch?
Oh, yeah.
The Black Mirror thing. I just thought, that's what I thought of when when I was reading this. And I know that that's not exactly the same, but when the content sort of imitates the form, it gets really interesting, I think.
I think your point about vocabulary, though, is a problem with these sorts of discussions, in that they can be so exclusive at one sense. Okay. Like, if you don't know the term, if you don't know this. And I think, in a way, these technological shifts have been so brilliant, but they've been so individual and personal and very much located to, like, one-off moments, that I still think we're reaching for some sort of virtual literature that doesn't quite exist yet, that we don't quite know its name. And the thought of making it public, like global, is so far away from where it is that it's got a long way to go before it gets to that point.
It's going to be cool.
It is. It is. And I hope it is.
I remember in one sci-fi issue of The New Yorker, there was a story called Black Box. Okay, so it was in The New Yorker. It's called Black Box, and it's by Jennifer Egan. And it was published in a series of tweets, because it is like a spy's log.
Nice.
So I thought of that, too. And I love those types of literature that where they imitate the form. Which normally it's the other way around, right? Like, the form imitates the content. But when the form becomes a necessity, like it is now with the Zoom calls, or any kind of virtual interfacing, it's going to get really interesting, I think. And I think that for this as well, like the article before saying, like, we might need a buffer, like a psychological, like, processing period before we see really good stuff coming.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it.
No, it should be great. I sort of started thinking about this article on, like, a more immediate level, and I'm thinking, well, I would love, like, the innovations that I would dream of would be like a library book that returns itself when it's due. Yeah. I would die for that.
Jumps off the shelf and flies out the door.
Yeah, you're like, what's going on? Oh, it's just returning itself. It's what it does.
Right. That's what we've programmed it to do.
Yeah, that would save my socks in so many senses. I was thinking like a second book in a trilogy that reminds you about everything that happened in the first. I would be so happy if you got like pop-up biographies of characters just going, oh, you don't remember me because I appeared in a tiny cameo in the first book, and this book that's appeared a year later has me in center position. Here's who I am.
Yes, I would love that. That would be yeah. That would be really helpful.
So right,
especially with some of these doorstoppers, because that was one of my main issues with many of them.
All right.
But before we get into the doorstoppers, we need to hear a word from one of our sponsors who makes this possible.
Yeah.
So, Louise, I have a question.
Go for it.
How are we defining a doorstopper?
Well, it's a... Oh, God, this is going to sound awful, isn't it? It's a big book.
Okay.
It's one of those big, bulky books, 500 pages plus, that sort of area.
Okay.
And it's the sort of book that you can't comfortably carry around without making a substantial life commitment to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I was thinking too, but I just wanted to make sure that you and I were on the same page and our listeners were.
Yeah.
Were as well. So,
yeah. I don't know where. I wonder if the expression does actually just come from like the doorstop. You know, if you just used it instead of a doorstop, you could use this ginormous book.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's clever. Let's do that.
All right, so the first one that I picked for this was a book called Duck's Newburyport by Lucy Ellman. It was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 2019, and it is a huge book. It's published by a small press in Britain, and they're really worth supporting because I think sometimes the small presses can take these risks in publishing the big, odd, unusual things that like mainstream publishing maybe doesn't have space for.
Okay.
It is the narrative of a woman's life. She tells it mostly in one long, unbroken sentence with the repetition of the phrase, the fact that. So it's like a stream of consciousness. She goes, oh, the fact that so-and-so did this, the fact that so-and-so did that, it's raining outside, so on and so forth. And this continues in this kind of overwhelming stream of consciousness and thoughts. And in some senses, I thought I hated it when I first read it because I don't think I'd ever been exposed to female thought in that density. Do you know?
Okay.
Sometimes you don't get that in literature that quite comfortably. So I thought I hated it at first, and then I was like really sure that I hated it. And then, I know, you just get to that point where you think, I really hate this. This is killing me. I can't pick it up.
Yes, I'm sure of it.
I'm very sure I hate this. There's no space for me to pause. I can't read to the end of a chapter. What can I do with this? Do I just read it solidly for the next 18 hours and just cancel my life? And then all of a sudden, I sort of suddenly realised, I was like, I love this. I love, love, love this. So... my top tip is persevere through the first kind of several hundred pages because all of a sudden you will have this moment of thinking, I get this book, I want this book, and I am in absolute love with every inch of it. But it is one of those books that you just can't carry. And I saw pictures of people like slicing it in half and sort of cutting it up and making it work for them. And I couldn't do that because it's a library book. And,
right. You
know, I think my soul would explode.
I think Darwin did that. I think he's the one that made that famous, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. He's tougher than me. I just couldn't cope with it. So, Duck's Newburyport was the one that made me think of doing this topic in the first place because it's such a beast of a book.
So we're doing ones that we love first.
Yeah.
Okay. So... one that I loved, and I did 400 plus pages.
No, that's good.
Because for me, that's still a lot. And to get through these, I know we talked about this on a previous episode, but to get through some of them, I say get through it, but I don't really mean to like power through it. I just mean like to make sure I'm making progress and the length of it doesn't ultimately intimidate me. I have to like assign myself so many pages a day. Usually I'll read more than that once I get going though. So yeah, one of my favorite doorstoppers is The Museum of Innocence by Orhan Pamuk. And it's translated from, I believe, the Turkish. Mm-hmm. And do you know this book, please?
I know Orhan Pamuk, but I don't know this one.
Okay, so this one is, it's a love story, which is uncommon for me to be obsessed with a love story. But oh. I was, because it was a little bit stalkery and a little bit unpleasant, because this man is engaged and he falls in love with his distant cousin and they have a love affair, and of course that does not go well, and he turns the apartment that they had their rendezvous in into a museum of things from her. So
ooh.
I know, which I mean, to his credit, she does love him back and was kind of taken away from her family. So it's more of a shrine than souvenirs from a crime,
okay,
if that makes sense. But it was so interesting to me, and it just kept unfolding. Like things, I feel like I told you most of the narrative, but that happens in the very beginning, and the rest of it is him unpacking what happened. So I really loved it, and I thought that the length very well suited it as well, because the form imitated the content type of thing. So that's The Museum of Innocence.
Excellent. So yeah, sometimes I think you can get a bit indulgent with certain books like this, the author. I'm thinking of one book in particular, which I won't name because that's not the road that I want to go down. But it felt that it just could have done with some massive editing. It needed just cutting down to size. And I think if you can fill like the length of this space, if you can go 400, 500 pages and actually earn it, as opposed to just kind of, I don't know.
Continuing.
Just banging on and on and on. And you're just like, guys, shut up. I'm done.
Right.
So what was that? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the get in late, get out early scene sort of thing most of the time. But I think, to your point, when you can do it well, it is really, really great and something special and to be celebrated.
Yes. Like, you don't want to know that time, you don't want to feel that time is passing, do you? You want to be kind of, you want to read it and kind of think, oh my God, I've looked up an hour later, as opposed to thinking, if I just keep going.
Yeah, and the another that I loved is The Swan Gondola by Timothy Shoffert, which I know I've mentioned on here before, so I won't go into as much detail about it, but the whole time, absolutely beautiful all the way through. Wanted to underline the whole thing. Yes, I do write in my books, Louise, I know, I'm sorry, but they're mine, I could do that, they're mine if I bought them. Yeah, and I found myself, like you said, looking up and it, like, hours having passed.
Yeah.
And then also caring more about what happened to the characters than people that I was actually interacting with. Like, I can remember wanting to tell them, like, oh, this happened to my friend. Like, that's how realistic the characters were for me. Is like, you know, I was like about to relay to them, like my actual friends, this happened, and now that didn't happen to me or to anyone that was in a book. So I just, that one was a real treasure. And that's The Swan Gondola. And then the last one that I loved that I wanted to tell you about is The Crossing by Cormac McCarthy, which is part two of the Border Trilogy. And it definitely is a literary Western.
Love it.
I loved it too. I mean, the whole Border Trilogy is amazing, but The Crossing is definitely the doorstopper among them.
See, that's quite unusual for, like, the second one of a trilogy to kick in, right?
Yes, and I think it was actually a really smart thing to do, because the All the Pretty Horses is also a Western, but much more fast-paced dramatically. And in the second one, it's a totally different character, a different set of... it does not seem like they go together necessarily, except for they're in the same time period. And then in the third, they merge.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. I love that trilogy. It's super long. You can buy all three together, but like you said, it's hard to carry around. Like, the quarantine is a perfect time to be reading a doorstopper because you don't have to go anywhere with it.
Yes, you are in one place. This is their time. Let the doorstoppers have their moment.
Yeah, but on the other hand... they can be terrible. Like, doorstoppers yes. can be just going on and on. So tell us about the ones that you hate.
So, again, when, like, planning out this episode, it was just basically there was one book that went in this bit, and it was Les Misérables by Victor Hugo.
Yes, and I remember you trying very hard for a long time.
I was thinking, right, I have to properly read this, because... I adore the musical. I think Eponine is one of the best characters you'll ever see, and she has some banging tunes, which I know I appreciate. It doesn't quite translate to the book. But, yeah, I love Eponine. I love Fantine. I think it's a really fascinating cast of characters. But the book, my goodness, it was just... I tried over and over and over again. And the point where I actually reached, like, my actual decision of going, I'm done, was when Victor mm-hmm. Hugo went, I'll hold on for a moment, but you need to know about every inch of this character's house, and I'm going to give you a lovingly detailed 300 paragraphs of interior design.
Mm.
I know, that was the noise I made.
I mean... I love interior design. I love hearing about historical homes, but that's a lot of it.
It was just, I just thought, no.
Yeah. I really feel like that should be interspersed with things that are actually happening.
Hmm.
Personally.
It's I think it's a lot to ask sometimes, and I'll appreciate it. There'll be people out there who love Les Mis and who are screaming at the radio now or... the radio.
Oh, of course. Like, all of the things that we hate, someone loves.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, forgive me for this, but I just thought, no, I you haven't earned this amount of commitment from me yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not ready to just go, oh, yeah, I think I will read vast amounts of detail about this guy's house, because it's not been... I haven't had the payoff. I haven't had some result for my investment here.
Right.
And I think, in a sense, I wrote about this the other day, it's almost like selfish reading. You want something to reward you for paying interest to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, do you know what? This description of this guy's house is it, and I am done.
That actually reminds me of the book The Princess Bride, which is called The Good Parts Version, because the conceit of the story is this man is... editing it because his grandfather read it to him, but it's totally different the way the grandfather read it than it is actually. And he talks about how, like, well, there's 300 pages here detailing, like, their wedding gifts. I cut that for you. You're welcome. So that's what it made me think of when I was reading this. Yeah.
So that's William Goldman, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, such a genius, that man. His books are amazing. And if you're into screenwriting, I know we're slightly stepping away, but his screenwriting books are just stunning.
Right, there's a good chance that one of your favorite movies was written by him.
Mm.
He's incredible and ubiquitous. Like, he's so much writing.
Mm.
He's great.
So what were the ones that, like, the doorstoppers that made you just go, no, I am done with this, I am done?
Yes, so, and I know that I'm going to catch some heat for this because I hate it so much. The unexpurgated version... of On the Road by Jack Kerouac.
Ooh, okay.
Flames on the side of my face. I just, it's so much of him whom I hate, and so much misogyny, and so much internal monologue of someone I hate. That I had to read it for a class, and I read it, and all of the other things, because it was a new journalism class, all of the other things I read, I loved Hunter S. Thompson, excellent I mean, you don't really like him as a person, but his writing is bomb, right?
Yeah.
And I remember going into this independent study and my teacher going, "So what'd you think?" And I was like, "Honestly, it was really hard for me to get through." And she was like, "He sucks, right? Don't you hate him?" And I was like, "Yes, I do."
Just this little club getting together.
Right, because the point of it was, of course, to be like, that is what was cool at the time.
Yeah.
So to get the, the full perspective of the culture, like, you have to read some of the things that you wouldn't have subscribed to, but that a lot of people did. And at the time, like, a bunch of my friends, this is back when you had, like, your favorite quotes on Facebook, put that, like, Roman candle burning, like, whatever, and I was like, you didn't read past that, I know it, because you wouldn't like it if you did. Anyway, yeah. So, on the road, I do not like that book. And this is also going to be, I think, a pretty unpopular opinion, but Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy.
I am nodding, if that's any sympathy. I am nodding away with this. I'm like, I think I'm with you.
So this one, though, I respect it. I do. I just didn't like it personally, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because there's so many characters. And when you were talking earlier about, like, the virtual literature, if we really could have, like, a little pop-up biography about a character I forgot, that would have helped me with this book so much.
Yeah.
And then someone spoiled the ending.
No!
Yes.
I had that with The Sixth Sense back in the day. Someone's like, you're not going to see this film. I'm like, well, I might, but I'm not going to see it now, am I?
Right.
Oh, right. The worst.
Yeah, and it normally wouldn't bother me, except for, in some cases, the ending is what makes the book worth reading. Like, it is a payoff.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And in those two examples, that's the case. So, and I was also almost done with it, and I was like, are you kidding me?
No, that's worse. Like, if you're three or four, I'm literally clutching my pearls at this point.
I know.
If you're like three or four pages into it, maybe, you know, all right. But if you're just at the end, oh no.
Right. And again, I do respect Anna Karenina, of course. I did finish it, but I know that it's classic, and sometimes the classics don't transfer into contemporary culture as well as we hope that they might. And I think that's one of them for me personally.
So I was intrigued as well at your other pick for one of the ones that you didn't like.
Yes. And this is not because I disliked the book. I just gave up because the book was so heavy. And I am ashamed to say that I didn't read it because I know it's amazing. I'm talking about Moby Dick by Herman Melville. And I really feel like the obstacle of the doorstopper in this case is not, or I mean, most cases, honestly, it's not so much the length. Like, I don't mind reading the same thing for a long time. It's the format, because I need the words to be big enough for me to read without hurting my eyes, and to make it so that I feel like I'm making progress. Like, I need to turn a page once in a while. I just need that as a human, physically, to be able to like with past it.
E-book readers, you can read through, but it doesn't sort of feel like you are making progress.
Yes, and I just ordered an e-reader. It was supposed to be here yesterday, and I ordered it for this reason, so that I could get through big books without having to carry them around, because, I mean, I know we're not having to go anywhere right now, but, I mean, it is somewhat discouraging to not feel like I'm making progress. And especially in the case of Moby Dick, where so much of what we admire about it is the syntax.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's easy for me to lose my place and then be like, where did this sentence start? And then I tried to get it on audiobook, and I was like, well, the syntax is so complex that I can't follow it on audio because I'm not really an audio an oral learner, but so I'm hoping that my new e-reader will help me get through heavy books. I think you can change the font sizes too, right?
Yeah, you can play around with how it looks and the display of it.
Love that. I haven't gotten to play with it yet, but I'm super excited, and I was sad it didn't come yesterday.
I know. I actually just bought one like last week as well. I wonder if it's a big trend at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
With people just going, yeah.
Yeah, and also I have a lot of like advanced reader copies that I haven't read because I don't like reading on a backlit screen, but I do want to read them. And in this case, things aren't shipping necessarily because people are working from home. So yeah. I gotta adapt to the times.
Gotta adapt to move.
Yeah. So that's my main want at the moment. What about you? What do you want the most out of Doorstoppers?
So, all right. So in a terribly zeitgeisty attitude, one of the things we decided to do was to finally watch season 8 of Game of Thrones.
Oh, dear.
I know. Oh, God. I was like, I'd seen all the reviews of it and thinking, well, you know, we need to just finish it off the series. And maybe, you know, in this kind of Pollyanna-ish attitude of, maybe it's not that bad. And you were all right. You were all so correct.
Right.
I appreciate I'm about a year behind at this, but you, oh my God, what is that mess?
Right.
So then to recover from this, we had to rewatch and I had to reread Lord of the Rings, primarily for Helm's Deep, primarily for the Battle on Pelennor Fields, primarily because I wanted a story that was big and fantasy and messy and full of people being people and noble and trying to do the right thing in complicated times. I needed something to wash away the mess of season 8 of Game of Thrones.
I understand.
So I've regained my love for Faramir, I've regained my love for Eomer. I've spent many days wondering about what life would be like as part of the Rohirrim. I want a big fantasy epic, and I'm wondering if people can help us out with some recommendations here, because we'd love to hear what you think.
Oh, yeah, we always love hearing from you. Yeah,
so if you can hit us up with a big sort of Lord of the Rings type epic full of noble people doing noble things, and if it involves maybe galloping around on ponies and swooshing a sword. I don't know if swooshing is a technical term here.
I think it is.
Yeah, swooshing. We'll go for swooshing. If it involves sword swooshing, then please get in touch and share your reading tips and we'll read them out in a later episode.
Yeah, and if you have a recommendation for me too, here's what I'm looking for. Similar to the Swan Gondola, similar to Boy Snowbird, but longer. I want like an extended adult gritty literary fairy tale.
Nice.
Something that shows perspectives of multiple characters and whose narratives braid together, but not too clean. You know, like a fairy tale version where it's not like not like they said about crime fiction where there's like justice at the end and the bad guy gets his. And I mean, that is great also, but in this case, you know, fairy tales just aren't that neat.
Yeah, you want that little sort of rough, ragged edge.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit. And then the kind that, like, when you have that rough, ragged edge, it makes you later just be like, but why? But for what? To what end? So, yeah, that's what I want. So if y'all have recommendations for that, get at us.
Yeah,
or even please. If you just want to say, like, can you do an episode about something? We love hearing from y'all.
Yeah, they're great. Thank you so much if you have got in touch.
Yes. Oh, and leave us a review. We need reviews so other people can find us.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So as part of this discussion, we will also link to two articles in the show notes that are big books and long books that feel short. And they are really good lists done by our colleagues at Book Riot. And good starting points on those. We picked out a couple of titles if you're wondering where to begin. They could be A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara, or Pachinko by Min Jin Lee. And we also shout out Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James. If you go down those routes and pick any of those three, or even any of the titles featured on those really solid articles, then you will not do wrong. And we, hope you enjoy them.
Yeah. So, as our sign-off, Louise, what are you reading right now?
Right. So this will not surprise you if you've listened to the show before, but I'm really interested in what women writers do with words and text. And for a while, the other week, everything that I was reading was indirectly about Virginia Woolf. like everything that I came across, I don't know if it's the, if you imagine you'll see a yellow car, you see a yellow car, that type of thing. But, you know, I was seeing quotes from her. I was seeing articles about her. Every book that I picked up mentioned her in some way. And I thought, well, this is a sign, right? I need to start properly digging into Virginia Woolf's work and seeing what's here for me. And I even ended up writing an article about her for a magazine. So
wonderful. Can we get to that as well?
Not yet. No, it's not out yet. Maybe in a later show we can catch it. It won't be out yet for a bit.
Okay.
But
yeah, we'll try to remember for the next episode.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So yeah, Virginia Woolf sort of popped up everywhere in this metaphorical manner. Not, you know, she didn't jump out from behind the hedges and go, hello.
But that would be amazing.
It'd be quite the achievement, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I started off with In the Orchard, which was a short story published in 1923 in a magazine. We will have a link to that as well, so you can read it. It's a very short story, but it's an incredibly evocative, vivid, skilled piece of writing. And what she does is she shifts between perspective and kind of explores a situation and an instance and a moment through all the different angles that you can do. And then I moved on to Night and Day, which is an interesting one. It's pushing me a little bit because I kind of have a difficulty sometimes with long sentences that stretch over like three or four pages and have 1500 sub clauses in them. But every now and then, though, she'll drop some sort of nuanced commentary or some description of social life or some sort of moment of character that makes me think, oh my god, you're really good. Like just that moment of revelation of just thinking, you are worth, and this ties into the doorstopper thing, right? You are worth plowing through these for these moments that you give me that are just like little like literary pearls that you just drop before me and just go, here you are. So what about yourself?
So I am actually between books right now because, as I mentioned, I was waiting on my Kindle yesterday, or my e-reader. It's supposed to come today, so I have several books that I want to read. I actually have, talking about like authors that have cropped back up, a lot of Shirley Jackson on deck.
Yes.
And I just got to watch the screener of the movie Shirley. Elizabeth Moss is a national treasure.
She is legendary, that woman.
Oh, she's so good. But I think what I'm going to read first is a book about, it's a research book. It's about Bumpy Johnson. It's his biography written by his wife. It's called The Harlem Godfather, The Rap on My Husband, Ellsworth Bumpy Johnson. So I think that I'll do that one first. Awesome. Because I've been wanting to read that one for a really long time, and I only have it electronically. So that's what's been preventing me from doing it, is that, you know, like we said, reading on screen. So excited for that.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you to our sponsors. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Yeah. However you get your podcasts, and don't forget to tell your friends about us. Louise, where can they find you?
In my house. Don't come around.
Me too.
You can find me online at didyoeverstoptothink.com, and I am on Twitter at ChaletFan.
And I am on MaryKMcBrayer.com, but also on Twitter at MKMcBrayer and Instagram at MaryKMcBrayer. So thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye.